TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca. Good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air, like the expert that he is. Jam-packed 3 hours for you of hockey talk on this Saturday afternoon. Coming up in about 1 hour's time from the Calgary Herald, George Johnson is going to join us. 2:15 this afternoon, Andrew Gross, he covers the New York Rangers for the Record, the Bergen Record in New Jersey. He's going to join us to talk about the New York Rangers. They'll be in Winnipeg to play the Jets next Thursday. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can send us your comments. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. Richie, Ezzy, good afternoon, gentlemen. How you both doing?
Pretty good. Good afternoon. It's finally good to be back at our regular time slot.
Yes.
We were waking up pretty early there, so it's nice to be back to normal, back to regular. Ready to go.
Richie, how you doing, bud?
I can't adjust to Ezzy not having a beard.
Yes, that's really the big news of the week, is that Ezzy managed to get rid of that piece of shag carpeting that was attached to his face for a while, so now it's back to the clean-shaven Ezra.
You got to say goodbye to, nothing lasts forever, Drew, so you got to say goodbye to it.
I'm just glad you're not going to start singing November Rain right now.
Right.
Anyways, let's start with last night in Miami, Florida, where the Winnipeg Jets defeated the Florida Panthers by a 3-2 margin, an overtime victory for the Jets, coming off the stick of Dustin Byfuglien, one of his individual efforts that probably caused some gray hair for the coaching staff, but at the same time provided the Jets with 2 points on the scoreboard. Did you have an overwhelming takeaway from last night's game from the Jets against the Panthers?
I think, Drew, it was a game that they had to have almost. I don't think any of these games are must win games with 20 games left in the season and in a shortened season, and anything can happen, but it was important to beat Florida after losing to them and wanting to at least get 4 points on this road trip. You're also playing a team in Florida that's got a fair amount of injuries, has been well documented this week, and it wasn't a game that was overly exciting. I think the Jets still give up too many opportunities, and Pavlik was terrific, but they do get out of there with 2 points and 4-6. Granted, one's in overtime, but still, 4-6 points. The game, little Florida venture, and then up to New Jersey. Any points they can get now will be a bonus, and I think the coaching staff's got to be pretty happy with that output.
Richie, they gave up 40 shots last night, so, yesterday wasn't the best defensive effort for sure. The Jets probably would have liked to have given up 15 less shots to an AHL team there in Florida with all the injuries they have. Versteeg was back, but yesterday was again, you're going to hear this word a lot, especially when it comes to the Winnipeg Jets. It really was a greasy effort for the Jets. They scored early, and they kind of held on to a lead. Florida stuck around, and then Buff came through with one of his miraculous goals that he's capable of. Kind of comes off the half boards and makes something out of nothing, and absolutely undresses Versteeg. And scores a nice goal on Markstrom, who I thought played pretty well, in relief of Theodore and Clemenson are both not playing right now, but overall I agree with Richie, it wasn't the best effort, but again they get the 2 points and at least get some revenge for Tuesday's game, because Tuesday's game without getting too dramatic here, might have been one of their worst efforts in Jets 2.0 history, following up that Washington loss. So there were some things that you're happy about going into the New Jersey game, but they're going to have to be a lot better in New Jersey, because the Devils are also a team that started off hot and struggled. The Jets aren't going to be able to give up that many odd man rushes, and there were some giveaways, probably Grant Clitsam's giveaway being the most noticeable one. But overall, it was a decent effort, and it was followed up. We forget about this, but this is the first back-to-back road wins for the Jets this So that's pretty impressive.
And the Grant Clitson turnover, excuse me. I mean, which one? When you watch the past few games, I mean, the guy is a turnover machine. And you have to wonder if they make a switch there.
Derek Meach coming in for Clitson, you think?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe it's a little bit more of a steady force. Clitson is very erratic in his play. Not great defensively, but just awful turnovers in his own zone. I think soft on the puck for the most part and not putting the right touch on it. And you have to wonder if maybe they'll make a swap there.
Well, Clitson's a guy who's got holes in his game because he was acquired off waivers. I mean, you know, that's, you know, what you expect of a guy. If you can't crack Columbus's lineup, what do you really expect? I mean, you know, you expect a guy who's going to turn over the puck, you know, and have some warts on his game. And that's what he does. But, I mean, I thought the Jets, I mean, I'm not surprised by this at all, but the Jets, I thought, came out last night, you know, very strong, obviously. They had the 2-0 lead, played a good first 15 minutes of the game, and then after that, that looked they really, their fatigue set in, and then it was all that they could do to hold on for the last 45 minutes of the game to manage just to take it into overtime. You know, you talk about Andre Pavlik having to steal a game for the team. He stole that one for the Jets last night.
You could say that he stole the game. He played really well. I mean, he stopped 38 shots. Anytime you stop 38 shots, you probably had a pretty good game, unless you let in five goals. But and Al Montoya played well on Thursday night. They got back-to-back, performances from their goaltenders that were above good, and that's important for the Jets. And when you know that you have two goalies, I mean, Montoya, you can't say enough about him stepping in after a month of inactivity. And giving them a great performance in Tampa. You know, look at that 5-on-3, the way he played. He looked confident the whole game. He was very close to getting a shutout if it wasn't for that goal in the late in the third period. So that's important. When Pavlik is playing well, the Jets don't have enough talent for him not to be playing well, especially against the lesser teams that they should beat. But you know, going into New Jersey, that's also positive because they're still riding Hedberg, and we know how much he's been struggling. So,
yep. Also, I mean, it's interesting, worth pointing out that when they go into New Jersey tomorrow, Jets have the off day today. They traveled up to New York, New Jersey area. Jersey's playing St. Carolina, so it's the second half of a back-to-back for New Jersey, but not for the Jets. So there is a bit of an advantage. Granted, it's the fourth and sixth nights for the Jets, but there is a bit of an advantage in that it's not a back-to-back for them.
If you're using fourth and sixth nights, it's just like, how long do the excuses extend? What? Oh, it's a back-to-back. Oh, it's the fourth and sixth nights. Like, everybody in the league plays fourth and sixth nights, I'm assuming, a ton of times during the course of the year. You know, excuses are for losers, and if that's an excuse that they're going to be using, then...
I'm not saying that they're going to be using that, but it's just it is a fact that, you know, I think fatigue is an issue. You can look at Chicago last night. Yeah, Chicago last night looked like they were exhausted. They came out to that strong lead, and then that second period, they looked like they were completely out of gas.
Well, I mean, but you look at it. They played last night in Florida. They fly after the game, I assume, and they land in Newark or at LaGuardia or JFK, whatever it is, at probably 2 or 3 in the morning, get into their hotel at 4 or 5, and they sleep till probably noon, get a little skate in, and enjoy the day in New York Saturday night, and may have more than a few drinks. And then Sunday morning they wake up. You know, there's probably not a game day skate.
It's a 6 o'clock game. 7 o'clock
so
local.
They have the day on Sunday. I mean, if fatigue is a factor there, then, I mean, just take the excuse book. Just keep writing more things in there.
Don't disagree with you in general. And I mean, and we're already talking about excuses, even though we don't know how the game's going to look out. So we're getting ahead of ourselves, certainly, in that factor.
Well, no, yeah. This team is playing a New Jersey squad that, to me, is greater than the sum of their parts. And is very well coached, but talent-wise, doesn't have an exceptional edge on the Jets. You're talking about a team, as Ezzy mentioned, who doesn't have their starting goaltender, who has, to me, a very average to below-average defensive core, and then some game-breaking forwards, and a solid forward group, but not the deepest group you'll ever see. So, certainly a winnable game for the Jets tomorrow. Just as I'm sure New Jersey's saying tomorrow's winnable game against the Jets. I mean, the Jets are middle of the road.
It's two mediocre teams playing against each other, although I think New Jersey's probably got a higher ceiling than the Jets do. I mean,
They went to the Cup with Parise, but they still went to the Cup.
Right. I mean, even though they lost Parise, I still think they're a better team now. I don't know if they're necessarily a better team with Hedberg in that, or maybe it's going to be Keith Kincaid in the second half of a back-to-back. you know, not that I don't think that, you know, I have trouble believing that Keith Kincaid is that much of a letdown over what we've seen from Hedberg over the last, you know, week or 2 weeks since Brodeur went out. Because, I mean, let's be honest, Hedberg's been, you know, pretty atrocious.
Yeah, he's been pretty.
Yeah, awful. He has. I mean, you had the risk going into this season with two goaltenders that were combined, I believe, 78 years old.
and you're not kidding there. I mean, it sounds like a joke, but it's not a joke.
That's the reality. And Hedberg, his game has tailed off a little bit. Whether it's because if it's a shortened season, he wasn't ready, or it's just, you know, he's not playing well. Period. Simply, and that's the situation where they're at. And you have to think if the Devils. If Brodeur, it's by no means guaranteed when he's coming back, so you have to think that they might be looking at picking someone up because Keith Kincaid has zero NHL experience, and they're reticent to put him in the lineup now, knowing that they need the points because the Devils have slipped from the top of the Eastern Conference standings to being a middling playoff team right now. So they're going to stick with Hedberg for now, and that's a benefit to the Jets because he's not playing well. They've already lit him up once this year.
The Devils are 2-6-2 in their last 10 games. I mean, they won their last game, granted, but they're 2-6-2 in their last 10 games. So, I mean, this is certainly a team you can take advantage of. And if the Jets are able to take advantage in New Jersey and you end up getting 6 out of 8 on this road trip, when you get half your points on a road trip, especially when you're not that good of a team, like the Jets are, because they're not that good of a team, you're generally considering it a successful road trip already. You get an extra 2. You make it 6 out of 8, like we saw in the previous long road trip through New York and Philly and Buffalo and everywhere else. It's another good road trip for this team.
They're a good road team right now. So the question is, if they, regardless of the result of tomorrow's game, is can they win at home over the course? And Ed Tate wrote about that today in the Free Press. You know, can they win at home over the course of the season or the remainder of the season? That's going to indicate whether or not, that'll be the main indicator whether or not this team can make the playoffs.
I want to go to break, and I want to come back, and I want to talk about the last two. We saw the last Saturday's game against Washington and the Tuesday game against Florida. I think it's safe to say in both those games the team wasn't prepared to play. Whose responsibility is that? I want to talk about that when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important and stressful life experiences. It's not an experience to be undertaken by yourself or left in the hands of a rank amateur. David Carr of Monopoly Realty takes the stress out of your real estate experience while you are secure in the knowledge that a true real estate professional is looking after your transaction. David Carr of Monopoly Realty, give him a call, 230-6129. One more time, that's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Gentlemen, last Saturday, the Jets lay an egg at home to the Washington Capitals, a team that really they could have, you know, to some degree, really put a beginning of an end into their season with a win on home ice last Saturday. They lay an egg, they lose 3-0. They go out to Florida on Tuesday. You think they should be mad after their Saturday performance. They play against a Florida team that is without 9 regulars in their lineup. It is really a AHL team or an AHL team. And they go out and they lay another egg. Whose responsibility for those two embarrassing efforts do you lay the blame on? Players or coach?
Well, Ez, I mean,
I don't know.
I'll start here. That's always a difficult thing to be able to discern whether or not it's coach responsibility or player responsibility. I think it's partly both. You know, I always feel like you look at Bruce Boudreau in Washington, okay? So for years they can't get over the hump, and all you hear about, and even hear Troy Brouwer talking about it recently. You know, there was no accountability defensively, etc., etc. And you obviously saw the 24/7 where he seemed to have kind of lost control of the team on that spiral, that losing streak prior to the Winter Classic, and you think, oh, you know, maybe he doesn't have control. But then, you know, Boudreau leaves, and sure, they get something from Dale Hunter, but it seems like the mettle of those players is such that there really isn't a ton there. So the question is it the coach, or is it the players? And that's what I mean, how difficult it is to figure it out. You look at this squad, do I think they're fully on board with Claude Noel's message? No, I don't. Do I think they've completely tuned him out? I don't think that either. But there are games where this team isn't performing, and I think that's a part of that is the coaching. And so I'm gonna straddle the fence here, Drew. Part of that's the coaching, but a part of that's also leadership, and some dead weight on this roster. Let's be honest here. And is the leadership strong enough? And even if it is, can it make up for the fact that some of these players seem to not really care at all? I mean, coaches can only do so much. It's the internal will of the players. And if those work hand in hand where the coach is motivating and the player wants to be better, that's a perfect fit. But sometimes a coach tries to do things and some players just don't care. I mean, has anybody seen Nikolai Antropov this year? Has he even dressed for a game? It's laughable. He's making over $4 million a year. He doesn't do anything. And, oh, people say to defend him. There's really nothing to defend. He's been awful. And the question is, you know, is he the first coach? Is Claude Noel the first coach to have that problem? Well, no, he's not. That's why Toronto gave up on him. That's why the Rangers gave up on him. So you have to take that into account. At the same time, I mean, sometimes you have players who maybe aren't developing as much or aren't always motivated. And maybe that is, and they're, maybe they're younger players, and maybe that is partially Claude Noel and the coaching staff's fault. So it's a simple question with a complicated answer.
Richie, you touched on the results of these games and it being part coaching, you know, part strategy, part leadership, part execution. Yep. That's what it is. And it's funny that, you know, the coach is your general. I mean, at the end of the day, the coach's job is based on how good has he done on the ice. Does he win or does he lose? If he's not winning, he could be fired. He's the guy the responsibility falls completely on the head coach. And this isn't just in hockey. This is any sport. It's his job is to have his guys ready to go. And if they're not winning, he's the first guy that's going to go, because it's a lot harder to move a player than it is to fire a coach. Firing a coach is pretty easy. Bye, you're gone. We're going to replace you. The player, you got to find a fit for. But hold on, I just want to say something here. Okay. As far as the Winnipeg Jets go, I mean, we're at the exact midway point of the season in the second year of Jets 2.0. They missed the playoffs by 6 or 7 points last year, and they hung around, but they weren't a playoff team last year. Not only did they not make the playoffs, they were, you know, they were a middling team, and at best they were a fringe playoff team in 2.0 history in the first season. Now the Jets have started off strong, you know, struggled. They've gotten back into it. Now they're one game over 500, a couple of points, 2 or 3 points out of a playoff spot now. However you want to characterize the Jets, are they a playoff team or whatever, with 24 games to go, guys, they're right in it. So they're right in it. So does that mean that it's a success, or Clinton Wells done a good job, or the players done a good job? I don't know the answer to that, frankly. I really don't. But as far as the responsibility, I think Claude Noel has done some good things, and he can take responsibility for good things, and you have to commend him. And there's other things that he's done that I don't think you can commend him for. I mean, the fact that the Jets this year on 4 or 5 at least occasions have gone out there and have looked completely lackadaisical, have had no energy. A lot of guys aren't finishing their checks, not doing simple basic hockey things that a lot of these guys on the Florida Panthers are doing that are in their first or second NHL games of their career. You look at a guy like Drew Shore just coming into the NHL. That guy is doing everything he can to establish himself as an everyday NHLer. Do you see a lot of those efforts? Some guys on the Jets you do. Is that Claude Noel's responsibility? Of course it is. At the end of the day, can he put on the skates and do the things that he's telling his players to do? No, but you have to evaluate everything, right? And that's what Richie's talking about. I mean, are they doing a good job enough on special teams? Obviously, no, they aren't here. Are they doing enough on 5-on-5? I think the Jets are a pretty good 5-on-5 team, to be honest with you. You know, is he getting the best out of some guys that need that extra motivation, whether it's a Burmistrov, whether it's an Antropov? You could argue no. So at this point, to say that Claude Noel's tenure thus far has been a success or failure, I think it's too early right now. And I think, to be honest with you, I think if you took, you know, 10 people in a room, half the people would say, you know what, he's done a pretty good job. He's, you know, inherited a team at first, you know, go around as an NHL coach. The other people would say, you know what, get Brent Sutter in here. He'll do a lot better job. Or Randy Carlyle, he'll do a lot better job. So I think you're going to get, you know, 10 different answers. And that's kind of what you get when you inherit a team. You know, and Chevy is still putting his own touches on the team.
And that stuff's garbage, though. I hate that excuse at this point. You're a season and a half in, he's got half this roster as his roster now, and he's got to fill up the farm system. But, I mean, the cultural thing, he's got his own coach, he's his GM. Half the team basically has been remade and on his terms. And so the whole culture of this and that, I mean,
well,
hold on a second. That's excuses, and enough excuses already. To Ezzy's point, special teams been awful.
Yep.
And if we're gonna criticize Ron Wilson for consistently having bad special teams, we have to look at
Ron Wilson when he was in Toronto as the head coach. You mean
the bad special teams this year? This team has not had strong special teams. Many people believe that to be a coaching aspect, whether it is or not. I mean, obviously it's a person by person opinion. I personally think coaching is a fairly significant aspect of that.
Yep.
And there are issues that I see there. But when you look at the people get lost, you know, and this is the media, this is everybody. So take a step back for a second, and it's Desi's point. Take a step back. Where did I think, in my personal opinion, that the Jets would finish this year? I thought they'd finish ninth. And where are they right now?
That's exactly where they are.
They're ninth. And that's not tooting my own horn, because believe me, I've had more wrong predictions than right. But the point is, that you can get emotional about the bad performance here, you can get emotional about the bad performance there, but then you can get just as emotional about the good performances. At the end of the day, when you take a step back, what are the Jets on paper? To me, they're about an 8th or 9th or 10th, 11th team, a 7th, you know, around there. So at the end of the day, what is their output? He's basically got them to be what they are. So then you get to the point of, in my opinion, you get them to be, he's basically got them to be where I think they are talent-wise.
So by default, this is where they would finish without really having much impact, regardless.
Well, no, I'm just based on
based on the talent level. If they play,
based on him as a coach,
right,
that's where I thought they'd be. So, as a fan, as an onlooker, do you think that he's done an exceptional job? Well, and as I said before, I don't think he's done an exceptional job. I don't think he's done an awful job. An awful job to me would be this team being basically dead last. Forget your organizational philosophy in terms of success. Based on the players on the roster, you know, close to dead last, to me, would be a poor performance by Claude Noel in terms of motivating his squad.
Right.
And one second, yes. And then you look at the flip side. Getting them into sixth or fifth around there, to me, sixth is like that. Like, I don't think they're good enough to be a sixth place or fifth place team. Maybe sixth, but fifth or fourth kind of thing. And then, you know, obviously the third place team wins their division. So as a default, is a third place squad. If he gets them there, I go, wow, what a job Claude Noel has done. So I think he's in the middle. And you have to ask yourself, if the Jets are trying to tailor themselves after Nashville, which everybody says they are, has Barry Trotz been the guy who's got his team to be basically what they are on paper or greater than the sum of their parts? And I think we all know the answer to that.
The answer is greater than the sum of their parts, but again, everything's looked at in a vacuum, and we know we're in a hockey mad market in Winnipeg. Every loss, Jets lose, fire sale.
I don't agree with that, Ezzy. I mean, obviously there's some outliers, but I think most people know what this team is, and they get upset when they don't see the effort. When they see efforts like they saw last Saturday against Washington and Tuesday against Florida. If they lose, people are okay with them losing as long as they put out the effort that people expect, you know, from a professional hockey team. And that's the problem I think most people have with the Jets, is that when they lose, oftentimes they don't even show up to lose. They just mail it in. They don't even bother to put out the effort. You know, and if they put out the effort and lose, people, okay, good effort. You know, sometimes the bounces don't go your way. There's been too many mail-it-in games that this team has that a lot of other teams don't necessarily have.
I don't disagree that they mail it in a lot. We don't get to watch other teams on a day-to-day basis to see if they're also mailing it in a lot. But our assumption is that they probably aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, they're in ninth spot. What did you think they were going to be?
Exactly where I thought they'd be. The problem is their losses are so glaringly bad that people have to ask the question, why are they so bad? Why are those losses, why are the losses seem magnified? Because there's just no motivation on the team. There's no effort on the team's part. That's the part I think people have the biggest problem with.
Right, and you can bet that the Jets are asking themselves that. It doesn't matter. You have to do something about it. Where we're at right now at the midway point in a shortened season is going to tell you a lot about Claude Noel and it, going into next year when the Jets move into the Western Conference. You know, mm-hmm. They're in a position, say whatever you want, but they're in a position to make the playoffs, as are almost every team in the NHL right now. So what happens from here? They've got more home games coming up. Like you said, Richie, home games are going to matter, and it seems easy. But this year, we've done a 360-degree turn. Last year, they were a terrible road team. This year, they've been pretty bad on home ice. So now, can they take advantage of the disproportionate amount of home games? And Claude Noel is going to have a lot to do with that, and making sure they're prepared in a different way, because there is a huge difference. You know, the MTS Center is a loud building and all that. Say whatever you want, but they do play differently. And
they've been playing poorer at home than they have on the road.
The next 24 games is going to show you maybe the most about Claude Noel. And you know, I think right now it's they're in a perfect position to prove all the doubters wrong.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment of the program is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli. We're thrilled to have Bernstein's Deli on board as a sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can always go there. Great meals. You can take some food home from Bernstein's Deli. They're located in the Cordon Village Mall at 1700 Cordon Avenue. Opening Sundays starting March 17th. That's next Sunday. You can start going to Bernstein's Deli on Sundays starting at 9 a.m. on Sunday, March 17th. Passover coming up quickly. Get your Passover orders in. Call Marla at Bernstein's Deli, 204-488-4552. Bernstein's Deli is just a terrific place. We've been going there for years. We're thrilled to have them on board as a sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I second that. I mean, I'm going to be eating more deli food than I normally eat, which is a lot. It's exciting. It's an exciting time in the deli industry, by the way. New slicers, new different cuts of meat. Do you subscribe to Deli Magazine? Because I do.
Interesting week upcoming for the Jets. Tuesday night, they play at home to Toronto. Thursday night, they have New York at home as well for the first time this year. And then again, next Tuesday, on the road in Toronto. You know, we talk about motivation. We talked about motivation last segment. And you got a team in Toronto that's probably, you know, certainly not especially talented or certainly not significantly more talented than the Winnipeg Jets are. But Randy Carlyle, you know, are you seeing sort of, you know, when you look at the Jets and you look at the Maple Leafs, does the skill set that Randy Carlyle have as a coach really on display when you look at those two teams? You know, the quality of a job he does as a head coach? The motivating job he does as a head coach?
He has a good motivating job. I mean, the Jets on paper, I think, are more talented than Toronto. Not significantly more talented, but are more talented. And I think Randy Carlyle, Drew, to your point, has done a tremendous job. He's got them playing. I think first and foremost, he's improved their defensive team play. And they were an atrocious defensive team, and obviously that extends to the special teams aspect of that he has had a significant effect on as well. But to me, it's that overall mindset of being a difficult team to play against, but being better defensively. You know, the Leafs for years have left their goalies on an island.
Yep.
Huge gaps. You know, you talk about a lot of coach speak, but the huge gaps between forwards and defensemen and easy to play against, all of those things are now gone by the wayside, and you have a completely different team that you're going to face. And so when you're facing Toronto, you know it'll be a difficult game, obviously physically, but you also know they're going to be playing a very defensively oriented game with the ability to transition and score on you as well. And the attention to detail, I think, also, as, you know, face-offs, Randy Carlyle loves matching lines.
Yep.
All those things, you know what you're getting when you play Toronto, whereas before, you knew you were going to get a lackadaisical performance. Now you're getting a difficult team to play against.
Would you say it's safe to say that Randy Carlyle demands more in terms of accountability from his players than, say, Claude Noel does?
I don't know that. As an
observer, somebody who watches a lot of hockey, if you're Nick Antropov on Randy Carlyle's team, do you get the ice time that Nick Antropov gets on the Winnipeg Jets with Claude Noel?
It's a fair point, but you know, do the Leafs have other reinforcements that are better than the Jets have? I mean, the Jets don't go into St. John's, and maybe the question is, well, the question why can be answered very simply. If you continue to dip into waivers, you know that you don't believe that you have anything worth bringing up to play in the National Hockey League. Like, literally, the Jets have, what player or forward have the Jets called up St. John's this year?
I don't think that
they haven't called up
my head. I don't think they have called.
They called up Meech.
I mean, they called up
Melchiori, and they've
Melchiori.
Called and they've no, they haven't called up a forward yet. Which, to be honest with you, I don't particularly like.
But the point is that they don't. So I think if you're in Toronto, you obviously have you started in the minors.
Yep.
You have the ability to do those things with players of that skill level. So it's a little bit, Drew, I think apples and oranges. But I do see your point, and Carlisle is a coach that we know the Jets brass is as high on as anybody, maybe higher.
Richie, as far as the Toronto Maple Leafs go and the Jets playing them on Tuesday, I mean, the Leafs are playing very well. They're in a playoff spot. I think, with all due respect to Paul McLean and Bruce Boudreaux for the jobs they're doing in Anaheim and Ottawa, I think at the midway point, this is just my opinion, you guys can disagree, I think Randy Carlisle is the best coach of the year this year. And I think if you look at the Mike Komisarek's been a healthy scratch the entire year. You've got Mike Koska and Corbinian Holzer, guys that don't have very much NHL experience. Mm-hmm. In Mike Koska's situation, he was considering going to Europe, and he's now a mainstay on the Leafs' blue line. But, you know, Phaneuf has been good this year. I think you mentioned this already, but he's done an amazing job with the D-Core. And, you know, James Reimer's back now. He's playing well. The Leafs beat the Jets last time they were in Winnipeg, and I think they play hard for Randy Carlisle. He's decided to bring Colton Orr back, Fraser McLaren. They let Mike Brown go to make room for Fratton. But, you know, they're a pretty good team right now. And I mean, the Jets on paper, sure, that might be the case. And I agree with you that they probably have better talent on paper, both on defense, in goal, and on forward. But the Leafs right now, are as a unit, are playing very well.
It's also the question is, you know, building the team to the coach or building the coach to the team. And, you know, we asked Brad Treliving about that, you know, Phoenix Coyotes assistant GM on our NHL midweek show about a week and a half ago. And it's an interesting question to ask in terms of, you know, Brian Burke and Randy Carlisle. And I've said to you guys before, and people have said this, had Brian Burke hired Randy Carlisle years ago, maybe he would still have a job right now. Because you look at that squad, and that squad is more of a Randy Carlisle hard-to-play-against squad. I mean, do we yet know the identity of Claude Noel? Because if you keep giving him Olli Jokinens and Alexei Ponikarovskis, I mean, how does any coach make that work?
Well, that's the problem. This is. I mean, again, you know, it's easy for us, you know, having this radio show, to, you know, gives us a platform. It's easy for us to look at this. But, I mean, we're not the only people that see a team like the Jets. And you look at a game like last weekend's game against the Washington Capitals, and you say, well, why not have a few guys out there like Patrice Cormier, Spencer Mihajlovic, bring those guys up, they're going to put a little bit more of an effort and, you know, finish their checks, create some energy, as opposed to some other guys that are out there. Sure, I think James Wright and Eric Tangrady have done a great job this year, but again, you have to single out not just Nikolai Antropov, but other players who aren't really giving you much. If they're not giving you offense, what are they giving you? Well, Toronto seems to be getting. Sure, you don't want to overestimate guys like Fraser McLaren and Colton Orr what they're doing. They're fighting. I mean, but they're creating energy, and they're doing something when they're out there. And I'm not to say that Anthony Peluso and Chris Thorburn aren't, because they definitely have. But it seems like nothing seems to motivate a lot of these players. And if it's not coming from the coach, it has to come from within. I mean, Nikolai Antropov, if he's not going to produce offensively, well, then, you know, you're putting a guy out there, you basically know he's going to go out on the ice and do nothing.
You also look at the roster. I mean, Klitsam, waivers. Wellwood signed, you know, both off seasons, really nobody seemed to want him. Peluso, before that, waivers. Mietinen, waivers. Wright, waivers. Tangrady, seventh round pick. So the only step above waivers. So when you look at the overall talent of the roster, you also have to take that into account.
And nobody thinks that this is a Stanley Cup winning team. Nobody thinks that this team is anything but a middling, at best, playoff team. The question I have is one of effort and accountability. Nikolai Antropov, and yeah, we're beating up on him because he deserves to be beat up on given the effort that he puts in, night out. If he keeps getting rewarded with, you know, 15, 16, 17 minutes of playing time per night, what is the why should he put in the effort if he keeps getting rewarded regardless of what his effort actually is?
Nikolai Antropov, based on what he's done this year and even last year, doesn't deserve to be on the first or second power play unit. You can't make an argument why he should be out
there. So is he playing the minutes he's playing because of his salary only?
Well, are they
not showcasing him for anything?
The Jets can't go, you know, Richie mentioned the system. I mean, right now they don't have forwards in up from St. John's. So you don't have an option. Chris Thorburn is being scratched right now. As far as I'm concerned, I think Chris Thorburn should be in the lineup with Peluso out. I'm not sure why Nikolai Antropov. Look at Alexei Kovalev in Florida. He was a healthy scratch. Claude Noel has the option to scratch Nikolai Antropov. Just because he's on a one-way contract doesn't mean he can't do it. And to be honest with you,
16 and a half minutes a game. What are you getting for the 16 and a half minutes a game you're giving to Nikolai Antropov? That a guy like Spencer Mihacek, you know, giving him 12 minutes and then giving, you know, the rest of the 4 minutes remaining to a bunch of other players.
Again, I'm not the coach of the Winnipeg Jets, but you know, looking at it from a logical perspective, or, you know, if you want to look at it from a performance perspective, whatever, I would rather have a guy that's trying to fight for a job for next year.
Especially,
let's be honest, Nikolai Antropov isn't coming back
right,
next
so
year.
Why does he keep getting 16 and a half minutes? You're exactly right, Ezzy. Nikolai Antropov is probably out of this city on April 3rd, if not sooner, when the trade deadline hits. So why keep giving him all those minutes if you know he's not part of your long-term or even short-term...
Don't have the answer to that.
...plans?
Organizationally, they must feel like they don't have anybody who's close enough to him to put him in the to put it in his place.
But we've all agreed that for the most part, he's doing next to nothing.
Right, but I guess the issue is, and I agree, Drew, and I think there should be an adjustment to his ice time. But clearly, they don't think anybody on the farm. I mean, it shows you how little they have in the system if he continues to get rolled out there. Now, I think what you're saying is,
I'd rather see a guy a guy who might not even have half the talent that he has, but at least puts out the effort.
Not only that, you're also saying that even if they don't have anybody, why is Antropov playing that much within the lineup?
Right.
Which is fair.
I mean, there's nothing preventing the Jets from scratching him for the rest of the season. Toronto's doing it with Komisarek. Doesn't matter how much money you make. If you're not performing, you get a guy up there. Mihacek was almost a point a game with the Jets. Spencer Mihacek, let's be honest here, he's not Mark Messier. But I think he's a pretty good hockey player. He'll go out there and he'll give you
a good, solid effort. You knew what you were getting from Spencer Mihacek last year. It wasn't great. It wasn't anything that's going to make you a Stanley Cup contender. But you got, for the most part, an honest day's work.
I'm not so focused on that. Spencer Mihacek is an AHL-type player.
Yeah, okay.
But my focus is this. Is Nikolai Antropov, by playing this much, you said the word showcase. By playing this much to me, Nikolai Antropov is only
driving down his value.
So I don't think by putting him in the press box or cutting back his ice time, you're actually lessening what you can get for him on the market. You might just be able to get the same, if not more. Leave them curious.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what certain Jets players could fetch on the market with the trade deadline less than a month from now. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing proper protective equipment is a must. That includes a proper-fitting, custom-made mouthguard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Give them a call and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. The Linden Market Dental Center can be reached at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, we were talking about, before the break, Nick Antropov, and he's an unrestricted free agent, and we know that the Jets are going to try and deal him at the trade deadline, which comes up on April the 3rd. We've seen a lot of Nick Antropov. We know what we would trade from. General managers in the NHL never fail to amaze us with some of the peculiar decisions they make. What can the Jets receive for Nick Antropov?
Well, Drew, I mean, I guess the question is, you know, where are you trading him to? So you're trading him to a team that expects to make the playoffs if they traded. Nobody's acquiring. Non-playoff teams aren't acquiring a pending free agent.
Right.
So then you limit it to, okay, obviously the teams that are, because it's not a long-term deal, to rental. So the teams that are going to make the playoffs, and that could be as many as 20 to 18 to 20 teams. But the next point is, where does he fit in within the roster of those teams? Like, to me, Nikolai Antropov's skill level is top two lines. But is any playoff team going to enter the playoffs or attempt to enter the playoffs with Nikolai Antropov as one of their top six forwards? To me, no. So then you get to, well, is it going to be a third liner? And in that respect, you know, how do you want your third line to play? A skilled game, more of a checking game? Because he doesn't fit into the checking game. He can play a skilled game if motivated, and he's not really going to play on the fourth line, and you take into account his compensation, which is significant, and I think $4.1 million cap hit. Now, that, of course, is adjusted for the time of the remaining portion of the season. But in any event, it's still a significant amount of money. So I don't really think, I mean, the currency is, for a player, for a really good player, you're going to talk first-round pick at the deadline. For a pretty solid player who can be helpful, probably a second-round pick. Third-round pick, if you're reaching, I think considering Antropov's salary, you're looking at a fourth-round pick tops. Unless you're trading problem for problem. You know, his $4 million salary near the end of the season for another $4 million salary of a guy who's also a pending free agent.
Fourth round pick, I mean, I know it's not worth a lot when you actually, you know, evaluate the possibility of fourth round picks becoming NHL players. But it's, I mean, I don't disagree with you, Richard, but it makes you wonder, you know, how many more times are general managers going to be burned by this guy? How many more times are they going to be burned by his skill set and what they see on paper before they realize what they actually have on ice?
Not much, because Don Waddell doesn't have a job anymore. But jokes aside, I mean, I think everybody knows what they're getting now. Drew, his next contract is not going to be more than a mil. So you're looking at, does somebody think they can get output or value for what they're getting? I don't really think so. So you're not going to give up value if you don't think you're getting value.
Well, if you look at the established teams and the teams that have had success, we've talked about it a lot, especially on the NHL Midweek Show on Wednesdays, the Bostons, the Chicagos, the LAs, the established teams, even the Anaheims, you've got pretty good players there, mix of leadership, got older guys, sorry, I should say veterans, and then younger guys. If you look at the third line of the Anaheim Ducks right now, you've got Saku Koivu there, you've got Andrew Cogliano there, I mean, Nick Bonino, that's a typical line for the teams that are already now thinking, okay, we're a playoff team. Boston Bruins, Chris Kelly, Rich Peverly, guys like that.
That's right.
Why are they going to trade, why are they going to give up a fourth, fifth, whatever round pick for Nikolai Antropov? He's not an improvement on what they have. So Nikolai Antropov, again, we've said it already earlier in the show, but he's a pending UFA for the Jets, and we know there's, you know, with certainty that he's probably not in the plans for next year. So especially if teams know that Chevy just wants to get rid of him because he has no interest in re-signing him, you know, you could be end up in a situation where it's a similar draft pick as New Jersey offered for Alexei Ponikarovsky. But as far as Antropov and how many teams are going to have interest in him, I think you could limit it to teams that right now that aren't just putting the puck in the net. A team like, to me, you know, I mentioned this on the NHL Midweek Show, a guy like Martin Havlat on the San Jose Sharks, he's gonna pick it up. He has to. He's been awful. But a team like the Sharks, a team that needs a bigger winger, maybe to score on their third line. But even that, I mean, you're acquiring a guy that hasn't even scored for the Jets, and he's been given the ice time, Drew. So he's been given the ice time, playing with Evander Kane, playing with Alexander Burmistrov, and he's clearly been the worst player on that line.
I think the more interesting unrestricted free agent that's, you know, going to be that could be up on the trade market is Ron Hainsey. Now, we spoke about Ron Hainsey last week,
right?
You know, Ron Hainsey has probably elevated his worth, you know, since the season started. You know, if the Jets had traded him in the offseason, they probably could have gotten, you know, maybe a third round pick for him. Now, I think that, you know, it's not unreasonable that they might be able to get a second and a third for Ron Hainsey. How do you see that situation playing out?
Well, I mean, I think what you look at it as a market value based on last year's trade deadline, right? Things haven't changed that significantly. For Johnny Oduya, they were able to pick up 2 seconds. Chevy obviously played his hand quite well there, and Chicago's happy they were able to re-sign Johnny Oduya, give up 2 seconds for a guy who plays in their top four and probably will for a couple of years. Chevy also was dealing with Stan Bowman, who he obviously worked with in Chicago, so it's somebody that he is more familiar with than other GMs in the NHL.
I think it was a second and a third, actually.
I thought it was 2 seconds.
No, I'm pretty sure it was a second and a third.
Okay, second and a third, excuse me. In any event, I think what you're looking at then is, Yeah, you're right. I think you're right, Drew. What you're looking at is, can Hainsey play in the top four for somebody? And can he? Sure. I mean, on a cup-winning team, probably not. But I think a team... Yeah, second and third. My apologies. You're looking at, I think for sure they can get a second for him because he can play over 20 minutes. He can move the puck. I mean, he's not great on the boards, but he can make a first pass. Certainly makes mistakes, but he's serviceable, more than serviceable, really. And there are teams in the league who can use defensemen like that. So I think a second and then, you know, maybe a fourth, maybe a third if you really are comfortable and are able to get that, but a second. But then let me ask you this. Let me put the question back on you guys. I think actually we need a whole segment on this issue. You're the Jets.
Okay.
It's April 3rd. You're tied for the eighth and final playoff spot. Or you're 2 points out. You're offered a second and a third or a second and a fourth for Ron Hainsey. What do you do?
You don't have, and
say Enstrom's coming back at that point. That's fine. You don't really have a left side defenseman to replace him.
He's playing with Bogo.
And you have the ability to, on one hand, possibly make the playoffs, gain the experience of the playoffs, never mind gain the exceptional amount of money that you'll make at the playoffs, you know, $1 to $2 million a game profit, because you're not paying the players anymore. Okay? So you look at it that way. All of this, you can make the playoffs, you can make the playoffs, you can make a lot of money in the playoffs, you can gain valuable experience, it helps your brand, all those things. On the other hand, in the future, you can add more picks who can be used to trade for other picks.
Yep.
You can, and you'd have no guarantee that you will make the playoffs. Plus, you save some money on the contract for the remainder of the season, thereby earning some money in any event. So there are many factors. And then the question is to you guys, what do you do? Last year, what they did was they traded Oduya and quickly claimed Klitsam off waivers to replace him. So lefty with lefty, and they've replaced him, and they added picks. But last year, they weren't in the same situation, I think, talent-wise, as they are this year. They're not the most talented team, but they have more talent than last year. And Klitsam isn't Oduya. So can you, again, do that? Because you're going to be hurting your team's chances of making the playoffs. It's an interesting question.
By the way, did you just answer your own question?
Well, I didn't answer.
I know, I'm bugging you.
I have a different answer than you would or somebody else.
I think that if you're Chevy, I think you can't do any. This isn't a cop out answer. I think you have to wait. And when you're 4 weeks away from the trade deadline, or I guess 3 weeks now, but when you're 3 weeks away from the trade deadline, a couple points out of the playoffs, with Enstrom at week-to-week status, he started skating, but we don't know. We have no idea when Enstrom's coming back. It could be next week. It could be 3 weeks from now. You need him, and Redmond is not available. So Derek Meech is a guy that you're going to put in when Postma or Klitsam is struggling. Mm-hmm. But are you confident that if you need the points, Meech, who hasn't been playing, unfortunately, can you put him in a top-four spot? So I think that right now it's the million-dollar question.
I want to stop it right there. Let's go to break. We have George Johnson from the Calgary Herald coming up, and then I do want to spend a full segment on that Ron Hainsey question that you posed there, Richard. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up next, George Johnson from the Calgary Herald. You're listening to TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from Calgary and the Calgary Herald, George Johnson. George, good afternoon. How are you feeling, bud?
Oh, I'm surviving.
You're surviving?
I'm muddling along.
Okay, that's all you can ever ask, right?
Oh, hey, that beats the alternative.
Yeah. George, have you tried echinacea?
I think I've tried everything but throwing myself under a sea train, but that's all right. I'll soldier on. I've been doing this for longer than I can remember, so I imagine I got a couple more years left in me.
Attaboy. George, we got to start with the Ryan O'Reilly offer sheet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the Avalanche had chosen not to match the offer sheet, and Ryan O'Reilly would have had to clear waivers and obviously was not going to successfully do that, would Jay Feaster have been fired by the Flames?
That's a pretty good question. I'm not really sure. He certainly would have been in the crosshairs because, you know, more and more this is starting to look like Jay Feaster's team. He inherited an unholy mess from Daryl Sutter, but we're 2 years into the Jay Feaster regime, and I think what might have saved him is the fact that other teams put in an offer sheet. They didn't know what was going on. The agent didn't know what was going on. The league didn't seem to know what was going on. The only guy that knew what was going on was Chris Johnson of Sportsnet. So I guess maybe he's the smartest guy in hockey.
George, we all know that there was a waivers issue with the Ryan O'Reilly offer sheet, mm-hmm. but as far as the offer sheet itself goes, did you think that was a good move for Jay Feaster and the Flames?
Well, to me, it kind of smacked of desperation. I mean, this is a team without a number one center, that has always been looking for that number one center to play with Iginla over and over. They've used Tanguay there this year. They've used Camilleri there this year. The back end money on the second year, 6.5. Mm-hmm. Was just like, whoa. Ryan O'Reilly's a pretty good player, but as someone pointed out, rather than saying that he's the leading scorer in the Colorado Avalanche, why don't you point out that he's the 70th leading scorer in the NHL last year? And that's a lot of money to put up for a guy like that. But I think it smacks of the desperation of this organization to get into the playoffs finally, after 3 years out, and the fact that they realized that their center ice position was, you know, the black hole of Calcutta.
Do you want Olli Jokinen back?
You know what? I hate to say I told you so to all those people in Winnipeg, but we were laughing the other day because Olli apparently now the highest minus of any active player. Around 120, minus 124, 25, something like that. I mean, you know, you can't teach that. So, he is what he is. What kind of surprised me was why somebody in Winnipeg didn't give us a call. But no one seemed to want to. I know he's a big center, and everybody's looking for a big center, and these guys miss a big center right now. I mean, if you look at the guys they have down the middle now, none of them have any size at all. They played against Anaheim last night. Getzlaff dominated. They're going into L.A. tonight. Big, strong, physical, grinding team. They have to play them back-to-back, and you know that Darryl's going to have them jacked beyond all comprehension to play these guys. So, I understand kind of where they were coming from, but we've had him here twice. I can't foresee a third Olli Jokinen appearance here. I just can't.
George, it's almost as if the Flames have had the hole up the middle since they traded Nieuwendyk for Iginla.
Yeah, no, it's fair. I mean, you always talk about strength down the center, and probably the guy that got along with Iginla the best was Craig Conroy. Right. But if you can't get along with Craig Conroy, you're a sociopath. So, he's one of the great guys. But him and Connie had a pretty good rapport going, and he had some decent, but he's never had that Adam Oates like Brent Hull had. Yeah. He's never had that guy, that was going to give him the puck exactly where he wanted to. A first line, authentic, high caliber, Lord look at him, number one center. And that's kind of the pity of Jerome Iginla's time here, is that we're never going to see that. We're never going to have seen him in his prime with a world-class, top-notch center.
So, George, what happens then with Iginla? Do you think this is his final season in Calgary?
That's a question that the club has come out ad nauseum and said he will retire a Flame. He will retire a Flame. He will retire a Flame. We have gone to, Great Lakes to explain to him after seasons, look, if you left, no one would think less of you here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you could hoist a Stanley Cup in L.A. or Boston or New York or someplace like that, no one would think you a Benedict Arnold or a betrayer or anything like that. This would be the happiest place on earth to see Jerome Iginla lift a Stanley Cup. And it's not going to happen here. So for his sake, I hope that he decides that he wants to move on to a place where he's at least got a shot.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by George Johnson of the Calgary Herald. George, you mentioned that this is, a Jay Feaster's team. And
More or less, right. Yeah, so, he's made some. He inherited still quite a few guys, but it's more Jay Feaster. I mean, he had that kind of a honeymoon out for the first year there because, you know, it was kind of like Obama inheriting the U.S. from Bush. I mean, what do you do with it, right? I mean, it's just this, so where do you start? But that is slowly wearing off. This is more and more becoming Jay Feaster's team, which means he's more and more on the hook for it.
Along those same lines, then, how has the organizational vision changed since he took the job?
Well, I mean, he inherited this thing where they had no picks, no prospects on the immediate horizon, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and they do have some decent guys down the road, but they're down the road. You're talking about Johnny Gaudreau from Boston College, who's, you know, just lit it up in the NCAA. He's my size, which is not a good thing in the NHL. But, you know, he's got a ton of talent. They've got Max Ryan. They've got some really good prospects. But, you know, we've seen this before where guys try to build a team and then don't live to see the culmination of it. You know, and I think that's what Jay Feaster's worried about. Because what he's got here now is it's a 500 team. That's what they are. They're 500 now. You know, they'll throw you a few bones and you'll think it's great. And then they'll, you know, kind of let you down at the end, which is what's happened the last 3 years, and I can't see it being any different this year.
George, you mentioned that the Flames are 500, like a lot of teams still scratching and clawing their way at the midway point of the shortened season. As far as Bob Hartley goes, how do you think he's done in his first year?
Well, all I can tell you, he's great with us. I mean, he's the most quotable coach we've had here since Crispy, probably. Wow. Which puts them as, you know, aces in our books. But, you know, again, they tried to change the culture here. They went out and they got some more skill. They went out and got Yuri Hudler as a free agent. They got Roman Cervenka, who was the, quote, best player outside the NHL, unquote, from the KHL. So they tried to upgrade. They got Dennis Weidman, a puck-moving, skilled defenseman. So they're trying to change the culture, and that's you know, something you have to give them credit for. But you know, it's a pretty long haul here. For Bob, I mean, he's used to, you know, throwing out Sakic and Forsberg and Kovalchuk and Hossa and guys like that. It's been a bit of a different thing. He wants them to be an offensive team. Brent wanted them to be a defensive team. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brent Sutter.
Yeah.
So there's been a cultural shift here, and it's taken them some time, to sort of buy into it. Last night, I don't know, they probably didn't watch the game, but they're behind 1-0 after about a minute, as usual. And then they dominate Anaheim, who looked fairly disinterested, for, you know, 20, 30 minutes, outshot them 21-7 or something, I can't remember. And then Ducks get a second goal because of a mistake, and because Bobby Ryan and Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry are, you know, unbelievable players, uh-huh. And then it all comes apart. And, you know, we've seen that before. It's an old story here.
Now, George, one player seems to have changed his game. You mentioned Hartley wanting to be more offensive. It seems like Jay Bomeister is more comfortable under Hartley than he ever was under Sutter.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, you know, he kind of feeds into what Jay Bomeister does best. I mean, he skates like, you know, uh-huh. When you watch him, it's kind of like watching, you know, you get these old Paul Coffey flashbacks, uh-huh. You know, when you see him skate. I mean, he's effortless. He's got an unbelievable tank. He can go for 30, 32, 33 minutes and, you know, apparently not break a sweat. I mean, he's not exactly Moose DuPont in the crash and bang department. And so he's been given the green light more and more by Hartley,
right.
You know, to join the rush. To help out the other night when they beat San Jose, here was a perfect example. Uh-huh. I mean, they cash a rebound of his shot as he moved into the high slot, and it's 1-0. And then, you know, he's doing that more and more. So yeah, I'm sure he's having a lot more fun now than Brent, who was probably pistol whipping him to keep him, had to have a tether on him, you know.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by George Johnson of the Calgary Herald. George, a bright spot for the Flames is TJ Brody. He's almost at about 18 minutes per game on the back end there. You know, can you talk about the progression of his game? And then maybe on the flip side, the Flames, well, we've been talking just since Sven Barchi down to the minors.
Yeah. The thing about Brody was, again, he benefits from Bob. because Bob's vision fits TJ Brody's skill set. And you know, the Flames might have the most polite defense in the history of the National Hockey League. They just might. And, you know, Corey Sarich, who's their only guy with a little bit of bite, you know, who'll deaden your forearms as you go past him. He's been a healthy scratch, well, seemingly forever now. So they're basically going with a, you know, high-tempo, puck-moving defense core, and Brody fits into that. And he's been mostly paired with Weidman, and they seem to complement each other pretty well. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, this is an organization that's looking for, and you just mentioned Sven Barchi, an organization looking for prospects to cling to. The future is bright, and here is why. And, you know, Brody fits into that category.
George, the trade deadline's coming up on April 3rd, and I'm not going to ask you, you know, are the Flames going to be buyers or sellers, because I think, you know, that's really not appropriate, and it's too early to tell. But what do you think they're going to do at the trade deadline, knowing that they were willing to pull the trigger on an offer sheet?
Well, I don't know. When you look at it right now, I still think the most tangible asset that you have to trade is Bouwmeester. As much as it might hurt, a lot again will depend on how close or how far they are. If they are what we think they'll be, which is kind of hanging around, you know what I mean, on the outskirts and the periphery, just outside the city limits of eighth place, you know, he may not do anything. But this is, you know, this is, if they aren't, and a lot of people think that if they weren't, it might be better for the organization, then he might be able to pull a deal of some kind of magnitude. And Bouwmeester is a guy that interests a lot of people. As you say, you know, his game seems to fit more. He's more noticeable now. He's more impactful now. And I think that that's certainly only upped his value to a lot of teams that, you know, say a Philadelphia or somebody like that, that think they can make a run at it. And here's a guy who maybe when he's in Philly or he's in Boston or he's somewhere else, doesn't have to be the guy. He can just come in and play 25, 26 minutes, really quietly, kill penalties, you know, and do a decent job. Jay Bouwmeester's only problem here is that he's a $6.25 million defenseman, mm-hmm. not a $3 million defenseman. And that's part of the reason he's taken the, you know, pistol whipping that he has around here, is because, you know, he's not that guy. And they signed him to that contract. And I think it'll depend largely on where they are and how close they are, because if they can get in, they have to make a push for it.
George Johnson from the Calgary Herald, thanks as always for joining us this afternoon on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem.
Take care, George. Thanks very much. Yeah. You're listening to TSN 1290. Let's go to break. 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our friend George Johnson of the Calgary Herald. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Legal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest-growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates. For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or give them a call at 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers.
To think I thought you had the most diverse body in the province.
Ouch. Anyways, before George Johnson, I posed the question, we were going to discuss what the Jets should do if they are right on the cusp of a playoff spot. You know, 8th, 9th, 7th. What should they do with Ron Hainsey? And the answer is not an easy one. Mm-hmm. It really largely depends on what kind of value you can get for Ron Hainsey. And puck-moving defensemen are few and far between. So if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, what's the minimum you can accept for Ron Hainsey to make that deal, knowing what it does to your lineup?
Well, and we've already talked about the fact that when you lose a guy like Ron Hainsey, you're losing a guy that's playing top 4 minutes, even top 2 minutes right now, with Toby Enstrom out of the lineup. I think it's got to be a higher draft pick. It's got to be higher than definitely a fourth or third rounder. I don't know. I don't know if you can get a second rounder. If you can get a second rounder for Oduya, I think Oduya is probably more valuable, and I like his game more than Hainsey. But you'd have to think that it would have to be Richie, a second or third round draft pick, or a guy that maybe you can get that might be able to give you something towards the end of the season. But Ron Hainsey right now is, as far as the pending UFAs go, and Wellwood is also one of them, he's probably the most coveted by other teams. But you're not going to get a top six forward for Ron Hainsey. At least I would think that you wouldn't, based on the fact that his offense has gone down progressively since he started in Atlanta, and he doesn't have any goals yet with the Jets. But he has done a nice job of playing 24 minutes a game for the Jets. So again, it is valuable. And look at the Rangers with Mark Stahl's injury. Mm-hmm. Who did they go out and get? They got Roman Hamrlik. We're going to ask Andrew Gross of the Bergen Record about. A lot of people are saying, you know, Roman Hamrlik's career is done. Uh-huh. So a team like the Rangers, a team in that situation is going to offer something for Hainsey. But could they get somebody else that they don't have to give up the draft pick for? That's why I'm a little bit confused, if, as far as I'm concerned, how valuable he really is.
Well,
because there's only a limited number of teams that are going to give up that draft pick for Hainsey.
Well, I mean, you can name some off the top of my head right now. You have the Rangers, obviously, with the Mark Stahl injury. Even without the injury, you could argue he would be valuable there. I've always thought that was a pretty good fit. What about Pittsburgh? You know, a team that lacks depth on the back end, lacks left-handed shooting depth on the back end, would be a perfect fit for Hainsey, in that Hainsey is a good, he can make a nice first pass and he can skate. The puck needs to go up forwards and let him take it down all the way down the ice, and they can control possession of the puck. I think he fits in Pittsburgh quite well. Even Detroit, the same idea, a skating team that can move the puck quickly. He could fit there as well. And so I think that he is a guy who can fit into many lineups. So I think that creates a market. When you create a market, obviously, the competition for that player grows, and then the compensation inevitably grows. I think you can get a second-round pick for Ron Hainsey. I think you can probably get more based on what we've seen last year. A second and a third, maybe. A second and a fourth. The question to me then is, does that make it worth it to deal him? And it's easy to say yes or no. But think about the ramifications.
And we spoke about the ramifications last week, in that if he leaves, either by trade or they don't trade him and they don't sign him, there is a gaping hole on the Jets' left side of the defense. With no immediate prospects to fill it, short of dipping into the free agency market.
So when you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, let's look at the situation, the possibilities. Your worst nightmare is you do not trade him and you miss the playoffs.
And you don't re-sign him.
Right. We're assuming he's not going to re-sign him under this circumstance. But yes, that needs to be qualified. That's your worst nightmare.
Right.
Especially because then if you didn't want to, maybe if you will, I assume, let's assume this. If they want to re-sign him, they will venture into that discussion with his agent prior to the deadline to see and gauge whether or not there's an interest there.
Sure.
And they can reach an agreement. So if you don't deal him and miss the playoffs, you've missed out on compensation. And what I mean by that is you have a player who's now going to leave you for nothing, and you haven't added anything into the system at all. And you missed the playoffs. So you didn't make any money in the playoffs. There's no organizational development in terms of competition in the playoffs. And you lose an asset for nothing when you're a middle market team who can't really afford to lose somebody for nothing. If you trade him and you get the second and fourth round pick or whatever it may be, and you don't make the playoffs, well, then you know what? You got compensation for the player. And you still have a chance to make the playoffs. So the best case scenario is they trade Ron Hainsey. The worst case is they don't trade him and they don't make the playoffs. The best case is they trade him, get compensation, still make the playoffs.
Right.
That's the way I would go. I would trade him and I would take my chances. It's not an easy decision though, Drew. Sorry to interrupt. It's not an easy decision. Kevin, it's the general manager job in any NHL team is not easy. Kevin Cheveldayoff has to make a hard decision. To me, that would be the decision.
I think on April 3rd, the Jets have to decide, have to go one of two ways. If Ron Hainsey is in their plans for beyond this year, You have to either have him under contract by the end of the day on April 3rd, or you trade him on April 3rd. You can't let the trade deadline pass, think you're close to an agreement with him, but not actually have pen on paper. I don't think you can even risk the possibility of him becoming an unrestricted free agent and the Jets losing him for nothing. I don't think this team, this organization, or really any organization in sports, there's nothing more damaging to an organization in sports than to lose an asset for absolutely nothing. Ask the Nashville Predators and Ryan Suter. You just can't do it. I mean, it's so difficult to...
Hold on.
Okay?
I understand what you're saying, and it makes complete sense. But you look at it in terms of the money-wise. If you're the Predators and you don't think Suter would have gotten you the second round that last year, because they lost in the second round to Phoenix.
Right.
And you played with three home games.
Right.
Say that home games for you is $5 million.
Okay.
And say you think without Ryan Suter, you wouldn't have made $5 million. And the second round draft for pick, or in that case, it'd be higher compensation. But if you think the player can get you into the playoffs and be a contributor to making that amount of money, maybe that amount of money is more than what you put as a dollar value on the second round pick or the third round pick.
The risk and reward is equal either way you go, because the risk is obvious that if you keep Hainsey thinking that you need him in your top four to make the playoffs, the risk is you lose him, okay? And then the risk is if you keep him and don't make the playoffs, you get nothing. And then the risk is if you trade him, there's multiple scenarios here, mm-hmm. and it's important moving forward, because the Jets defense as it's currently constructed isn't going to be much different next year. Right. They're probably going to go out and replace Ron Hainsey, and we've talked about this, get a left shooting more physical defenseman to complement Bogo, who they're going to have to re-sign. Buff, Stewart, and Enstrom are all going to be there next year because they're all under contract, and you'd have to think that one of Postma, Redmond, and Klitsam is going to be offered a contract, maybe two of three, maybe all three. So he's the only guy that you know there's a good chance he won't be on your roster next year. So this is a decision that has ramifications, big ramifications. Oduya, I think you had more, the Jets had more depth last year. Oduya, they were true. In a position of strength. And I think that Oduya is a better defenseman than Hainsey. That's my opinion. But I think you're right, Richie. A team that needs a guy, you know, for the last month of this abbreviated season, they'll give up the second round pick, especially if you're a team that has the prospects or you know, is willing to take an equal risk in a guy like Ron Hainsey. And Ron Hainsey isn't you know, interchangeable with a lot of defensemen. The argument could be that our team's going to want to go after a Ron Hainsey. Look at Ottawa with Peter Wiercoch and all these other guys that are AHL defensemen, or even the Leafs we talked about earlier. Do they want to just keep their defense as is and not give up a pick? It's an interesting argument, but I still think there's always going to be a team that wants that veteran guy and that's willing to say, okay, you know what? We'd rather just give up the third or fourth rounder, but you know what? We got to make a push here. We'll give up the second rounder.
The key is exactly it's a threshold between playing the 10 to 12 to 13 minutes a game and then being able to play the 17 to 20. There's a big difference in talent level there. And that's hard to replace. You know, you can call the guy up and say, oh, I think he could be good. But the truth is, at least you know Hainsey can do it. You need to have that ability depth-wise. Because when you go into the playoffs, that's it. That's all you got. You can't make any more moves. You need to know, if this happens, I have this. Because if you take the risk of not having that depth, one injury may throw your whole season down the drain. And we're talking big money here and big stakes.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.